I'm so excited to tell you about Delete Me, the sponsor of this podcast. Have you ever Googled yourself? It's so frustrating that things like our name, email address, phone number, and even the list of our relatives are being sold online by data brokers. This poses a considerable threat to our privacy, especially if our personal info ends up in the hands of scammers or stalkers. I wanted to put an end to this, which is why I went to joindeleteme.com and signed up for Delete Me. Delete Me's privacy experts comb through the countless data broker websites looking for places your data shouldn't be, remove it, and send you a report on what they've done. They do this all year round, so I don't have to think about it. Since I opened my Delete Me account, I feel better knowing my info isn't easily available online to be used against me for fraud, harassment, or identity theft. You can get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/protect. Go to joindeleteme.com/protect. That's joindeleteme.com/protect.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Well, welcome to the Path Forward. It is Tuesday, September 30th. And I want to start tonight actually with a couple of public service announcements. So I have a few coins left to ship. If you're a paid subscriber on Substack, I have a challenge coin made up. And if I had my camera working tonight, I would show you again the coin. But if you're a subscriber, send me an email, and I'll send you a challenge coin as a thank you for supporting the channel. And I appreciate all the kind words for those of you that have sent me emails, and I appreciate the fact that you guys support the channel and, you know, help defer some of the costs. I've been doing this for 5 years. And when I started, you'll notice that my screen name in the channel is How the West Was Lost. That was my first channel. I started out doing a podcast just talking about the COVID lies and why it was a lie and all the stage nonsense and the data and science and all the catchwords and catchphrases they were using to dupe the public into believing the story. And if you go back to Orson Welles in the 1930s, War of the Worlds, you will see why the intelligence agencies and the elite use fear as a mechanism to control the public. It's highly effective. You can get people in an emotional state, and they will do just about anything when they're scared. Sign up for just about anything. And I have a strong distrust for large bureaucratic organizations to begin with, but I don't trust the elite even more than that. And I despise the intelligence agencies. So I can tell you that I've always had a healthy dose of cynicism and skepticism when it comes to the official narrative. And I watched a little bit of Charlie Sheen's interview with Tucker Carlson today. And I have to say, he had a very quintessential line in the whole interview. And he said, I'm in the business of making fiction, and I know it when I see it. And I guess I could say the same thing. In the information business, a lot of what you do is fiction. You create fiction so people will buy into it. And I got to tell you, watching the interview, you're watching a guy who's been through the ringer you know, self-induced, but he's been through the ringer. And they talk about 9/11. They talk about Alex Jones. They talk about a lot of other things. And I got to tell you that it was refreshing to hear somebody talk about it from the Hollywood perspective. But that said, the other side of this, when I started this to really break through the noise and to teach people how to discern the signal in layman's terms without using a lot of doctrinal terms, without using a lot of doctrinal jargon, without deep diving into the psychology of it all. And try and put it in layman's terms that people could actually latch into and use as a daily barometer against the bullshit that's, wait, let me say that right, the bullshit that is continually put in front of you. All of us are susceptible to it. In fact, I think a lot of us bought into the 9/11 narrative wholesale because we just didn't know any better. And now we do. Now we're, this crowd's more suspect of everything we're seeing. And at the same time, when I started my first channel, and when I ultimately found my way to Telegram, I found some good people. Actually, they found me. And I'm not sure how that happened, but I found a lot of really good people. And through that process, you know, people have come and gone. I've had to push some people away. I've had to cordially disinvite people. And, you know, the guys in the roundtable will tell you, I don't do a lot of mediation. I'm not a camp counselor. I don't have time for that. And my view of the world is, if you're an adult, then you can figure out how to sort your own problems and sort your own issues. It's not up to me to sort it out for you. And, you know, when you're in a group of military guys and you're the senior guy, everybody wants to look for you for guidance, which is fine. But there's a difference between guidance and direction. And I don't provide a lot of direction to the guys in the group because I feel like if I have to provide direction, you're not set up to be in the group anyway. Because the group I created and tried to build, and I'm still building it, by the way, I wanted to build a group of thinkers. Men and women that were immune to the bullshit. They were immune to the narrative. They were immune to all of the tricks that are played on the rest of us, right? All of us still fall into the trap of the narrative. It's easy to do, right? You just get immersed with the negativity. And eventually, if you don't step away from it, it catches up with you. So we all get caught up in it. But the value in the group is we don't have groupthink. We just don't. We disagree on things. And over time, we figured out how to do that tactfully. Some guys just don't engage. Some guys do engage in a polite way. Sometimes it's direct. Sometimes guys leave the room, but they come back. And that was the whole intent. It was never the intent to be large and in charge. Because I feel like if I have to be large and in charge, there's something seriously wrong with the discourse in the room. And I'm not a subject matter expert on everything. I mean, Bracken's a student of history. Bill Bupert's a student of history. Clay Martin's a warfighter. Chris from Combat Studies Group is a warfighter. Joe Dolio is a warfighter. All these guys are authors too. They don't need me to be large and in charge. What they need is me to facilitate so we can throw ideas out there and chew on them and figure out independently what we think is actually happening in the background. Because a lot of what we're seeing is masked by a lot of noise. So you have to filter through all that noise to figure out where the signal's at in it. And I built a group and invited people in to the core group because I wanted deep thinkers. And I think we have that group. I think the round table bears that out. And yeah, there's still some rivalries in the group, but my attitude is the same now as it was when I started the group. Go figure your shit out sniff each other's ass, shake hands, and leave the room as allies. But go into a private room when you have a disagreement, throw the fucking plates around, beat the shit out of each other, but come out and be on the same team. And I think we've zeroed in on that. And why it's important is we're immersed right now with noise, misdirection, a lot of ambiguous clues, a lot of ambiguous information, a lot of ambiguous feedback from the system.
And I'm so excited to tell you about Delete Me, the sponsor of this podcast. Have you ever Googled yourself? It's so frustrating that things like our name, email address, phone number, and even the list of our relatives are being sold online by data brokers. This poses a considerable threat to our privacy, especially if our personal info ends up in the hands of scammers or stalkers. I wanted to put an end to this, which is why I went to joindeleteme.com and signed up for Delete Me. Delete Me's privacy experts comb through the countless data broker websites looking for places your data shouldn't be, remove it, and send you a report on what they've done. They do this all year round, so I don't have to think about it. Since I opened my Delete Me account, I feel better knowing my info isn't easily available online to be used against me for fraud, harassment, or identity theft. You can get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/protect. Go to joindeleteme.com/protect. That's joindeleteme.com/protect.
Let me be clear. We're fighting a system. This system was created after World War II, even before that in some instances, depending on which part of the system you're talking about. So I was really militant about building a room full of people that were independent thinkers and could decipher the noise in their area of expertise and their domain of knowledge and bring good information that the average person could take an action and turn it into actionable information. Because the problem I see across the information space is you got a lot of people talking, but nobody's telling anybody how to operationalize it. Like this, and I'll use Sarah Adams as an example, right? Her story's changed. A year ago was she was on Sean Ryan and she was predictively programming that there was going to be, that the threat was 1,000 kill squads or death squads, however you want to look at them, would be unleashed on the U.S. in a lot of public spaces, hospitals, schools, shopping malls, sporting events, you name it. And now the story's changed. Now it's they're targeting specific states and specific cities. And now they're targeting airlines. That is a threat actor. That's what that is. It's a threat. Issue the threat and let the public do what they want with it. But the thing I should remind everybody of is that threat is coming from the CIA. It's coming from MI6. Because they're the ones that fund Al-Qaeda. They're the ones that have created and funded ISIS. And Mossad and MI6 fund Hamas and Hezbollah. They're created in their constructs. Just like Antifa's a construct of the democratic elite, if you want to call them Democrats. I just call them the political elite. Because they're all in the same class as far as I'm concerned, whether they... No matter which side of the aisle they're on, they're all equally useless and they're all completely irrelevant now. But the threats changed, and the threats changed because the board's changed. And when the board changes, you adjust your plan. So they're what you're seeing is they're adjusting their plan because they don't have the capability to carry out the strikes that they could carry out before. So now they're adapting the threat. And over time, as they get attrited out into irrelevance, at some point, the threat won't be there. But it's a very real threat that we should all be paying attention to, especially when you consider the fact that this has been in mainstream now, and it's being mainstreamed on multiple channels. It's a credible threat. The piece that I want everybody to take away from that is, when this is all said and done, you know, somebody asked me today, when this is all said and done, how do you want to be remembered? And I guess it stemmed from the Charlie Kirk question, you know, how do you want to be remembered? And it's a question we should all ponder. How do you want to be remembered? I want to be remembered for one thing, and really one thing only. And that despite my entire life, I want people to look back and say, he was a good man. Not your war hero, not your savior. No, I don't want any of that. I don't even want to be a politician. I just want people remembering me as a good man that did the right thing, even when it was hard. Because I think that's the true measure of a man. You do the right thing even when it's hard. You do the right thing for your family. You do the right thing for your friends. You do the right thing for your faith. You do the right thing for your country. And we don't always do the right thing. We're human. It's human nature. But we should all be asking ourselves right now, how do you want to be remembered? When you look back on your life, how do you want to have people look at your life? You want to look at your life and say the sum of your entire life was positive or negative? And the reason why I'm saying that is we're approaching a culmination point. And we're seeing this, and get away from the Charlie Kirk stuff. Because to me, Charlie Kirk was a message to all of the, not just the mega crowd, but it was a message to a lot of people across the spectrum. And I am leaning towards it was MI6 and Europeans that did it versus Israel. And I know that's probably unpopular given all the anti-Israel conversation that's going on right now. But I keep coming back to the same thing. And that is, Israel and Mossad are masters at assassination. They are masters at it. They don't need to kill somebody in public, and it's really not their MO. And even though there's this growing, you know, body of evidence that, you know, could be pointed at Israel, that's really MI6, the British, European, that's really their MO. Is public executions. That really is their MO. And that dates all the way back to, you know, the sixth century with the Brits. If you go back to all their wars, that's their masters at public execution. And they've been doing it for a long time. That's who I'm leaning towards. And I could be wrong. They could all be involved in it. And they might be. But I look at the MO of this and I look at the reasons for it. And I get away from all the other stuff, right? I get away from the conversation around what Netanyahu's doing in the press. I don't care. It doesn't add to his credibility. All it does is take away from his credibility and, you know, his meeting with the social influencers. I take that as the Israeli government has finally figured out that they've lost the information war when it comes to Gaza. And now they have between 6 and 7 billion people that hate them. And they realize the numbers involved in that is not survivable for them should that 6 or 7 billion people decide to pick up arms against them. And that's why I think they're desperate to retake some of the information war. That's why they're putting Larry Ellison to buy TikTok so they can try and control information. But here's the thing about controlling information. You know, back when I was a major, I used to listen to these nitwits at Fort Leavenworth at Army War College talking about information dominance. Like information superiority, information dominance, you know, air superiority, air dominance. It's the same shit, right? It's the same concept. But here's the thing about information. It's something we learned graphically in Iraq. You can't control the number of mediums that the enemy can use to communicate and to shitpost about you, no matter how hard you try. You just cannot control all the mediums. And as much as you want to, as much as you exert control, they will find another way. You can shut down all the online, all of the wireless. You can shut down the cell networks that people will be using radios. You shut down or jam the radios, they'll start passing CDs. You shut down, you know, the power, they'll start passing notes.
I'm so excited to tell you about Delete Me, the sponsor of this podcast. Have you ever Googled yourself? It's so frustrating that things like our name, email address, phone number, and even the list of our relatives are being sold online by data brokers. This poses a considerable threat to our privacy, especially if our personal info ends up in the hands of scammers or stalkers. I wanted to put an end to this, which is why I went to joindeleteme.com and signed up for Delete Me. Delete Me's privacy experts comb through the countless data broker websites looking for places your data shouldn't be, remove it, and send you a report on what they've done. They do this all year round, so I don't have to think about it. Since I opened my Delete Me account, I feel better knowing my info isn't easily available online to be used against me for fraud, harassment, or identity theft. You can get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/protect. Go to joindeleteme.com/protect. That's joindeleteme.com/protect.
The information will get out no matter what you try to do. And that's the piece that most people don't latch into, because they're too wrapped up in this idea that I got to have technology in order to communicate. No, you don't. The Arabs would spend minutes in the community spreading lies, and they would spread through the community like wildfire. They didn't need a radio to do that. They didn't need a phone to do that. They just walked in there, walked into a store, and started talking shit. Hey, did you hear this? No, I didn't hear this. Well, this is what I heard. And his buddy walks in 5 seconds later and says, dude, I just saw this guy get smoked. The Americans just smoked this guy for no reason. Really? What was he doing? Nothing. He was just on the side of the street. And it would just literally spread like wildfire. And when there was things that we wanted to keep under wraps, you know, like the guys that were going up to different cities to manage the elections for 2005, we couldn't keep it a secret. I mean, 5 election officials from Baghdad got smoked the moment they stepped into Mosul. And we had no idea how the information was getting out. Like, we'd pick the guy up, we'd put him on a plane, we'd go drop him in a safe house, he'd walk out the front door and get smoked. And nobody ever figured out why. I can tell you why. Because the word of mouth is just as effective as a radio. It just takes a little longer. And if you have proof to go along with that, guess what? The truth will get out no matter what you do. And in this case with Charlie Kirk, there's so much information that's floating around. Like, people are zeroing in on the mic remote. People are zeroing in on it. Here's what I understand. Why was he wearing a mic remote if he had a handheld mic? If he's got a handheld mic, you don't need a mic remote, because that's remote. And it talks to a base station that's probably on the table, which is plugged into a soundboard, which is probably 20 feet away. So why do you need that? There's a lot of inconsistencies there. But the information will get out eventually. It's already coming out. But I'm not rushed to point my finger at somebody when there's no credible evidence of it. You still don't know who was working for who, right? And there's all this. And the reason why I distrust the Israel narrative is not because I think they're innocent. It's because it's just not their MO. But more importantly, there's no credible evidence to tie them to anything. Yeah. Charlie Kirk was going to turn down a bunch of money from the Jewish lobby. Yes, he had a lot of donors. But you could have said that about any one of his big donors. The way that works is, well, look, the no autopsy piece, that's just another indication that this is a massive cover-up. The fact that everybody in the inner circle around Trump isn't talking, and they're still going along with this narrative that this kid took the shot, That's another suspect thing. You've got a bunch of people that are, you know, saying, well, if this kid made the shot, then give us more video. There's more video of this kid on the roof. There's video of this kid with the rifle. You're telling me that you have all this video and you don't have a video of the kid pulling the trigger? That's why I say there's too many things about this that don't add up. And more information is coming out about the shooter and the shooter's whereabouts afterwards, et cetera, et cetera. So a lot of it doesn't add up. My point is the truth will come out at some point. And if you have somebody like Candace Owens, and if she's genuine and she's really trying to get to the truth, and she's not a disinformation node, or worse, she's a misinformation node, or she's, you know, controlled opposition, then whistleblowers may seek her out that are in the system. Because again, every time I talk about operations, I always talk about logistics, because I realize how much every operation depends on logistics. It doesn't matter what it is. It means if it's moving an aircraft from point A to point B to drop troops, you still have a lot of logistics to do that. You got to get the plane there and back with fuel and without being shot down. You got to get fuel in the right places so the aircraft can accomplish the mission and drops the troops. You got to make sure the troops are dropped and they have sustainment. You got to make sure you have communications. You got to make sure you have people monitoring communications. You got to make sure you got a quick reaction force. You got to make sure the quick reaction force has enough equipment, has the ability to get to the conflict space without getting smoked on their way in. Are you starting to see the bigger picture about how much logistics plays into everything? Logistics is so important in everything, and it's the tell. Because to pull something like this off where all these people are quiet, it means there's a lot of people involved in it. Because the entire administration is quiet about it. They all made their parade, and they all made their show, and they paid their homage at the memorial service. They all said their words, did their novenas. And you could take that a couple of ways. You could take that as them publicly acknowledging whoever is behind this. And we all know that somebody big is behind this, because the entire administration, the people that supposedly lead the free world, are all lined up with the narrative. And nobody's talking outside the narrative. So you can make the case right there logistically that there's a lot of people involved. A lot of people involved to keep the story straight. A lot of people involved to curate the narrative. A lot of people involved to make sure all the loose ends are tied up, to make sure all the evidence is tied up. Logistics plays into everything. And if you pay attention to logistics, you'll realize that a lot of different players at the nation state level would have been involved with this. That's why I'm not ready to say it's one nation state over another. And all of this shit reeks of European. It reeks of, you know, a lot of different players. But what we're really watching is we're watching a dick-waving contest between a bunch of oligarchs, and they're not sure who's going to win yet. And we've been watching this for years. So I wouldn't get wrapped up in one nation state or another. I'm just going to wait and see. Because the tell is going to be how many people are still talking about this 12 months from now. Because 12 months from now, most Americans will have forgotten about it. Oh, yeah, he got killed. And that's the same with just about every other major event that happens. Like, how many people are still talking about the Maui fires? Nobody. Not even Trump. And do we ever get a real body count of how many people were killed, how many kids were killed? Do we have an idea of how many people were missing? No, the state came in and annexed the land. Is anybody talking about that? They're playing on the fact that most people will move on and forget about it. And the tell is going to be a year from now, who's still talking about Charlie Kirk and what evidence has surfaced that's going to change the game. But the only way for Charlie Kirk to really get justice is not from a whistleblower. It's going to be from these people that were involved being held accountable that are above the law. And that either happens through the system, or it happens outside the system, or it happens by a revolution. Those are your choices. The system's not going to clean itself up, and the system's definitely not going to police itself. They've made that abundantly clear with Epstein and everything else. So 6 months from now, most people have moved past it. And that's what the elite are counting on. They're counting on the fact that you're going to just move on and forget about it and say, we're never going to know the truth. That should sound vaguely familiar to 9/11, to the Kennedy assassination, to a host of other nefarious activities that have gone on. That's what they're banking on, because that's their script. And they know human nature well, because they've played this over and over again, and the same thing happens. And the same goes for the North Carolina floods. And anybody still talking about all that FEMA activity? Anybody at FEMA held accountable for all the malfeasance? They went in there and spent, you know, thousands of dollars. They brought in these tornado shelters. They basically set up these huge camps, and then they just tore them down and left. They didn't help anybody. Is anybody still talking about that? How many people in North Carolina are still homeless? I mean, we're coming up on another winter. How many people are still homeless? The point of the whole conversation is that most people don't give it a second thought. You move on with your life, and you don't give it a second thought. If we want the system to be reformed, if we want the system to collapse, then we have that. The narrative can't change. The pressure has to stay on the system to crack and break the glass ceiling. That's the only way it's going to happen. And it either happens through, one, non-compliance, two, through kinetic, or three, the system organically fails on its own because it can't sustain the lie, again, because of logistical failures. So really, you got to ask yourself, which one of those three is it going to be? Because at the end of the day, I think a logistical failure is going to bring the whole system down. I mean, we're playing with a house of cards. And the house of cards, and you listen to all these guys go after Kash Patel and Don Bongino. Alex Craner did a very, very good Substack article this week, and he talked about basically what he said was, don't be afraid of these people. Lose the fear. You've heard me say that. That's why I say it. Because this monolithic threat, we could be anywhere. We can infiltrate any organization. That's not true. They have a limited amount of forces, and they focus those on the highest threat. They can't cover down on all of us. So number one, don't be scared. Number two, don't believe that they have as much tech as you think they do. Because I've been told several times that there's some really high-tech things that the government has at its disposal, but they don't have a lot of it. And I believe that. Because like any operational technology, it takes a long time to get that operational and to get it deployed in mass. Look at the F-35. Look at the F-22. What was the F-22 in development for almost 20 years before it was finally put in the field? And then it had a bunch of field issues like the F-35 that they had to work through to get it mission capable. It took the better part of two decades to get those aircraft operational. And any operational system, once it goes from drawing board, R&D, proof of concept, and then into operations, it's a significant lift to get it in production. And the truth of the matter is, when you're talking about tech they want to keep secret, they don't make a lot of it because they don't want it to get out. And because of that, I don't think they have all the whiz-bang tools that you think they do. They probably have some of them. They'll probably get some of us, but they're not going to get all of us. And at the end of the day, keep that in mind, because that's why I say lose the fear. Because even if they have the most high-tech shit, they could put an alien orb over your head that can vaporize you. It can't vaporize everybody. And that's the piece that Alex Krenner was talking about. Lose the fear. Don't be scared of them. These people are fucking dumb. They are. They're fucking dumb. All you got to do is look at Nancy Pelosi, dumbest woman on the planet. Her story changes every single week. She doesn't remember what her story was. The tell in all of this is the fact that they can't keep the public buying into the narrative anymore. People aren't buying the bullshit. They're not signed up for the media to tell them how to think and what to do and what to say and what to believe. That ship sailed. And the same goes for Israel. Israel plays the whole victim card and everybody's like, go fuck yourself. We've heard all that shit. You guys are the aggressors. At least be honest about it. But they're dicks. And because they're dicks, they don't want to admit it. They got to play the victim card. And their arrogance is their undoing. Because they play the narrative so long, they play the same narrative and people are just like, just tune out. It's like Congress. If you're watching the shutdown, let me tell you what that is. That's a bunch of mental masturbation to keep people scared that their Social Security checks aren't going to show up, or their tax return isn't going to show up, or their Medicaid isn't going to be there. Let me give you a quick rundown of how that works. Entitlement programs don't stop even in a government shutdown. They're still spending money. It's autonomic. They've got it set up to where all those systems are in place, just like military paychecks. But they go through all these theatrics and all this bullshit and all these press conferences. Here's the part they don't realize. Most of the public doesn't care. No one cares. No one. Thune gets up and talks about Chuck Schumer, and Chuck Schumer talks about Thune, and Hakeem Jeffries gets up and talks about how everybody's a racist, and nobody cares. You know why? Because they're all irrelevant. Everybody's figured out that they're all compromised. So nobody's listening to them. So they're sitting there playing their theatrical games, thinking that the world's still captivated by their bullshit, and no one cares. It's like CNN. CNN says some of the most blatantly racist shit on TV, but there's only 7 people listening to them. And they're all over 80 and they're boomers, and nobody gives a fuck about them either. So the point is, they don't have the reach they thought they did. They don't have the narrative captured like they thought they did. And mainstream media, as well as television, is dying a slow, painful military death because the bullshit is stale. You want to keep people interested? Go be like Miley Cyrus. Her bullshit changes all the time and everybody's captivated by it. It's like Britney Spears. I don't know what happened to that girl, but Jesus, watching one of those videos that goes out on TikTok or on Instagram. My God, talk about watching the zeitgeist. That's a train wreck you can't take your eyes off of. You spend like 5 minutes or whatever she's doing, go, what the fuck is this woman doing? That's how you keep the audience engaged. Keep the bullshit fresh. And all the stuff we're seeing is stale bullshit. The Senate briefings, the Senate Judiciary Committee, the Senate hearings, the UFO hearings. Boo.
I'm so excited to tell you about Delete Me, the sponsor of this podcast. Have you ever Googled yourself? It's so frustrating that things like our name, email address, phone number, and even the list of our relatives are being sold online by data brokers. This poses a considerable threat to our privacy, especially if our personal info ends up in the hands of scammers or stalkers. I wanted to put an end to this, which is why I went to joindeleteme.com and signed up for Delete Me. Delete Me's privacy experts comb through the countless data broker websites looking for places your data shouldn't be, remove it, and send you a report on what they've done. They do this all year round, so I don't have to think about it. Since I opened my Delete Me account, I feel better knowing my info isn't easily available online to be used against me for fraud, harassment, or identity theft. You can get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/protect. Go to joindeleteme.com/protect. That's joindeleteme.com/protect.
Bullshit. It's all bullshit. And the public's tuned out of it. You know, when you go to the store and you go to get a fucking sandwich and it's $25 for a sandwich when it was $10 2 years before,
before, do you think you, how much of a shit do you think you're going to give about Congress and what they're doing? The real question that you're asking yourself is, when does one of these guys get smoked? They've lost relevance because they've lost the narrative and they have no other playbook. That's why Israel is so desperate to regain the narrative. They're paying influencers. And this whole new catchphrase of the woke Reich, that ain't going to play well either. It's going to have the opposite effect. It's already had the opposite effect. And it's because they're completely divorced from reality and what the public sees and how the public views them. And that's not a faux pas. I've seen this graphically several times. When you underestimate the audience, you underestimate the message and you overplay your bullshit. People lose interest and they tune out, which is exactly what's happening right now. And that's why guys like Tucker Carlson, regardless of what you think of Tucker Carlson, whether he's CIA, not CIA, whether he's disinformation, controlled asset, controlled opposition, who cares? People are tuning out of the mainstream media so their reach isn't as effective. And we're seeing that shift happen right now. Again, logistics failures are starting to hinder their ability to push the message and to keep the reach they have. And I think that will only accelerate until that system completely collapses. The question we all have to ask ourselves is, how much of the system is going to collapse and how ready are we? And that was the question I wanted to ask years ago and get to a point of clarity of, here's what you should be prepared for. But there's so many, I posted on Substack this week, multiple lines of operation was the post. And I try and keep my posts very succinct. I'm not like Burlingame. I can't sit down and knock out a 10,000 word expository essay about why the British should keep the crown and why everybody else is a flaming hot asshole. I mean, he's exceptional at it, right? And he's got the historical references to really give you context of why all of those historical contexts play into today. I don't like that. That's not the kind of messaging I like to do. I like to get short and to the point. This is what you're seeing. This is what I think. This is what you should be doing. And the piece of all of that that I think everybody should be locked into right now is, be ready for anything. The biggest thing is, be situationally aware. I see so many people right now that are so completely checked out on their phones. And everybody does it. I do it too. But they're not situationally aware of their surroundings. They have no idea who's around them. They have no idea how to evaluate people to see if they're a threat or a potential threat. They have no idea how to do that. And they don't. And human nature is, you typically don't. That's why that gal on the train got smoked. She had no situational awareness whatsoever. She wasn't even looking around her. I mean, you see this black guy get on the train and, you know, his hair is disheveled, his clothes are disheveled, he's wearing dirty clothing. Okay, you could figure out he's probably homeless and he's probably potentially a threat if he's on drugs. Not hard to do. And that's not a stereotype. I see that almost every day here, whether it's Mexican, a white person, you see a tweaker, a guy walking down the street yelling at everybody. If you're in a confined space with somebody like that, you probably want to pay attention. You don't want to put your earphones in and tune out, because the next thing you know, he's on top of you, beating the shit out of you, or worse, stabbing you, or he's already shot you in the head and he's stealing shit off your dead body. The point is to be situationally aware. That's the biggest thing you can do right now to counter all the threat. And along the lines of the multiple lines of operation, let's go back to Sarah Adams for a second. So Sarah Adams has a threat, right? Here's the threat profile. They're going to go after planes. They're going to go after shopping malls. They're going to go after hospitals. They're going to go after first responders. And they're going to be death squads, because they're going to fight till they're dead. Okay, that's the line of operation. Another line of operation is the threat is issued to keep people in fear so that they can keep you distracted, so they can keep building their surveillance system, or they can introduce another threat and get that set up. My point is they have multiple lines of operation they can choose at any time to conduct an attack like this. And they've set the stage so that there's multiple lines of operation to keep your eye out for. But the truth is you can't be situationally aware 100% of the time. But you want to be prepared 80% of the time, and you want to be 100% ready 80% of the time. And that most people can do. But it takes a group of people and a community to do that. Some days you're 10%, some days you're 50%, some days you're 80%. Having people around you in a sphere of influence with line of sight that can complement you in throughout this time period and be there in a moment's notice, that's the value of a resilient community, because you can't be 100% all the time, but you can be 80% most of the time. And you should be vigilant 100% of the time. Put your fucking phone down and pay attention to what is around you, who's around you, what they're wearing, what they're doing. Watch their body language. Look them in the fucking eye. Most of these punks that are doing a lot of the petty crimes, you look them in the eye, they'll back down, because most of them are fucking cowards. Look them in the eye. 2 years ago, I was in Costco, and this was back when my show was doing probably, I don't know, 10,000 views a show. And I was getting hits from all over the world. And I was in Costco, and a group of four Chinese guys, clearly PLA, clearly short haircuts, all wearing the same clothes. They weren't really buying anything. They didn't have a cart, but they were following me around the store. And I noticed them, you know, two aisles in. I watched them walk in behind me. I didn't see them in the parking lot, but I watched them walk in behind me. And I glanced over as I was walking, because, you know, you always walk through the TV section as you walk into Costco. And as I was walking through there, I just happened to glance over my right shoulder just to see who was behind me. And there's four Chinese guys, and two of them were looking at me. So I walk down a couple of aisles, walk into one of the aisles, and just kind of loiter a little bit to see if they come follow me. Sure enough, they come down to the end of the aisle. They're all talking. They're looking at stuff. So I move down a couple more aisles. And finally, when I get down towards the alcohol section, I confront them. And I'm, you know, I got in their face. Who the fuck are you, and why the fuck are you following me? And it startled them, because they weren't expecting me to pay attention to them, let alone to get in their face. And finally, they left the building and left Costco. And I let the management know, and, you know, talked to law enforcement, the whole nine yards. And it just so happened that there was law enforcement in the building for something else, which is what I think spooked these guys. But the point is, know your surroundings. Pay attention to who's around you. Pay attention to what they're doing. Don't take anything for granted, especially right now. And know where you're vulnerable. And if you can be armed, be armed. And you should be. Now, look, nothing may happen for another 12 to 24 months. That's not the point of the exercise. The point of the exercise is to change your behavior and break the patterns that you're in. And break those patterns so that the pattern you get into is vigilance. Because that vigilance will save your family's life or your life at a moment of opportunity when nobody else is paying attention. You need to be the one that's vigilant, paying attention. You know, and I said to my kids years ago, when we go to like Disneyland or we go to, you know, something, some big place, I would say, stay close to me, because in a big crowd like this, somebody can snatch you and you're out of my sight once you're 5 feet away. And in a big crowd, I'll never find you. So stay close to me. And they paid attention. Now they really pay attention. My oldest really pays attention. And my youngest too, because they've had experiences where people were following them through the store or following them in their car. So now they're hypervigilant. And that's where you need to be right now. You need to be hypervigilant of your surroundings. You need to know who and what are around you at all times. Because remember, we imported almost 40 million military-age males into this country for the over the past 5 years. And they are not gone. They are still here. And whatever concatenation it takes, and wherever they show up, that's the signal that they're still here. So we need to be paying attention. And part of the Sarah Adams threat, and this is something that should resonate with all of you military types that are listening. One of the things she said was they're going to go after military heavy communities, specifically in Pennsylvania. And when you break that down, what she's saying to you is, we're going to go after the people that can resist us. We're going to go after the people that can resist and overthrow the government. That's what she's saying. They need to take out the war fighters, because there's a hell of a lot of us. I mean, we processed over, what, 1 million people through Iraq, probably 2 million in 10 years. And we have a lot of wounded. We have a lot of, you know, psych cases, but we also have a lot of veterans that came back. And a lot of special forces operators went over and came back. And it's very, very important to anybody who's going to try and disrupt our nation to take down that fighting capability. That's what she's saying to you, is that we're going to take out the military resistance first, and then we can take care of everybody else. I mean, I personally think when they get down to the South and they hook up with all the Bubbas down there, it's just going to be shotgun sales and empty beer cans and a bunch of rednecks standing over all these dead foreign fighters going, get her done. I don't think it's going to get that far, but still. The point is, you can't be prepared for every contingency. You can't carry all the stuff that you think you're going to need for 2 years, unless you're in a fully armored U-Haul that's got 6x6 to where you could drive over any terrain. You're not going to carry enough stuff for 2 years. And even then, you'd be hard stretched to make it past a year. So you need a community, and you need the ability to communicate with your community. And you need to me, a resilient community is one where you don't need a lot of structure and guidance for people to take the initiative and do the right thing for the community and for their family. And you don't need a lot of overhead to provide guidance for all those people that don't know what to do. They just latch on to somebody around them and start doing things and pitching in, and then pretty soon you've got a resilient community where everybody's pitching in and doing the work. You don't need people in your community that don't take any initiative and don't have any work ethic. They're just going to be a resource drain. You need people that will, you know, self-organize, self-task, and move out. That's a good resilient community. People that know, okay, this is when we should start planting. This is how we source water. We need these people to help source water. And the community comes together and you figure it out. This mindset that you need an overarching leader, you need a council or whatever. To me, that it's just overhead. And what it leads to is it leads to too many different scenarios where the decision-making cycle is slowed down. Now, do you need a leader in a fight? Yes. But you can designate a leader for conflict. That's easy. But you should all be self-organized, and you should be associating with people that can self-organize and have initiative. Otherwise, you're going to be dealing with a bunch of victims that don't want to do anything, don't want to help themselves. You don't have time for that. And if things go really sideways, you're definitely not going to have time for that. So the last thing I want to talk about is this speech and this general's meeting that Hegseth did today. The first thing you should realize is he wasn't just talking to the generals. He was talking to the SESs. He was talking to the civilian leadership. He was talking to all of the contractors and all of the consulting houses and all of the people that have been embedded in DOD and in the defense industrial complex for the last 50 years. And what he was saying is, we're not going to do any subversive DEI. We're not putting up with any fat bodies. We're not putting up with any insurgents. We're not putting up with anybody who is not focused and laser focused on defending the country. And our first and only mission now is to defend our borders, which is the military's mission. That is their mission. Defend our borders. Defend our country. What I saw today was a Secretary of Defense Secretary of War that said this very clearly. This is our mission. You either get on board and do the mission or you're history. I don't care what rank you are. I don't care what company you're affiliated with. I don't care what position you have in the civilian government. I don't care what consulting house you're from. You will do the mission or you will be gone. Any insurgents, anybody wanting, you're out. And what he was doing, he was setting conditions so that they can terminate contracts, they can terminate people and get rid of those positions. And really who he was talking to was the senior executive service. The insurgents that were put in place by Bush and specifically by Obama. They're setting conditions to take back DOD or the Department of War now. And the Department of War, that dates all the way back to the Revolutionary War. And he's correct. It dates all the way back to when we started as a country. And to be honest with you, that's what it should have always been called. The Department of Defense was just another way to water down the fact that we're defending freedom. Really, they made the DOD change so that they could be the beat cops for the rest of the world. What you're seeing is a clear and very succinct message that we are no longer the beat cops for the world. We're no longer going to support and fight everybody else's war. We're going to fight the wars that affect us here. We're going to fight wars that affect our strategic interests. And we're going to go after people that not only meddle in our country, but have committed acts of violence and acts of war against our country. And one of those is an act of war that was conducted by whichever nations were involved in the 2020 election steal, because there was foreign nations involved. Just in Arizona, just one machine. When Cyber Ninjas did the audit, they just did a cursory view of the machine that was given to them, or at least they had access to. They saw 800 anonymous connections from outside the U.S. directly to that machine. That is an act of war. And finally, we have a Secretary of War that has said openly, if you have committed an act of war against us, we are coming to get you. And that's exactly what he should say. Now, how much of it is theater? I don't know. How much of it is being said for enemies? I don't know. But I know there's a lot of general officers in that room. If it was me, I'd have just got up and, all right, here's the deal. I want everybody to raise their hands that was appointed by Obama. You're fired. I want everybody to raise their hands that was promoted to general during Biden's administration. You're fired. I want a show of hands of every gay and lesbian in this room that supported the trans movement, DEI, and the jabs. You're fired. Now, the five of you that are left, you're in charge. If you fuck up, I'm going to walk you outside, put a bullet in your head. Get to work. 700 dudes in the room, 700 people in the fucking room. That should tell you we have way too many general officers. And I would have been brutal. I'd have got up there. I wouldn't have been polite. But again, it was a theater. It was theater for everybody that wasn't in the room. But the message in the room is, number one, if you're a disgusting fat body, your days are numbered. Number two, if you're an insurgent, you're out. And then you're going to get prosecuted. And number three, and most importantly, if you've committed treason, you're already out. So here's your one opportunity to resign. And you'll watch, you're going to see a bunch of resignations after this. Because he even said, if you can't support this mission, then you should resign today. That's a polite way of saying you're fired, which is exactly what I would have said. I mean, he's in a pit of vipers that was created by Obama and George Bush. Because don't forget, the Rumsfeld fired everybody that had the stones to say you can't occupy Iraq. It's a million men to occupy it. And what did it turn out being? Over 350,000 people on the ground. And we still couldn't hold a fucking city street. Not for very long anyway. So that's what you heard today. Reorientation and direction of what our mission should be. And that's what it should be. The Department of War is about fighting war. It's not a social experiment. It's not a class experiment. It's about being ready to conduct and wage war against our enemies, who probably outnumber us. In the case of China, they definitely outnumber us. And they realize there's an existential threat. Now, does that mean we're going to be able to rearm and re-equip before the economy collapses? Who knows? But the point is, today he said what he should have said. He reoriented the Department of War to be what it should be, Department of War. That's what I saw today. And I'm giving the benefit of the doubt because I saw a bunch of other theatrics and bullshit too. But the point is, the secretary actually did what all the secretaries before him should have done. And the only one I saw do some of that was Secretary Gates. Like the most quintessential moment of that guy's career was when you saw back in 2000, I think it was 2008 or 2009, the Air Force was doing all the wheeled air, space, and cyber. And I remember them coming in, briefing that shit to the SecDef, and the SecDef said, "What? Sir, we own air, space, and cyber." "No, you don't." "What, sir?" "No, you don't. You don't own cyber. You don't own space. Just stop." "Stop what?" "Stop your ads. Stop your recruiting efforts. Just stop. That's not what you do." Done. Ads gone overnight. That's what Secretary of War is supposed to do. This is your job. Why are you doing this? Go do your job. Come back when you have it figured out. That's the way it should go. And we'll see how it, develops from here, but that's a good start. Now they have to change the physical standards. And look, Stu Scheller and Matt Lohmeyer are both in DOD right now. And those are two very, very smart dudes. And Scheller was the only guy to stand up during the whole COVID nonsense to say, "No, I'm not doing this." And he stood up after the Afghanistan withdrawal, which is what what every officer should have done. But he was the only one that stood up. And now he's in Department of Defense. And you know what he's doing? He's working on accountability. He's working on officer promotions. He's working on building a metrics for officer promotions so that limp dicks and retards can't get promoted anymore. And when you put a guy like that in charge of that system, I guarantee it's going to be fair. And you won't be asking yourself 10 years from now, "How the fuck did that guy get promoted? That guy's a retard." You won't see that. You'll see some of it, but it won't be nearly as pervasive as it has been for the last 20 years. And they won't have these canned buzzwords that go to a promotion board. Yeah. No. All that. Those days are over. The point is they're trying to build a solid force now. The problem is we got 100 million Americans that have been vaccinated that are probably sick as hell. We got military members that are sick as hell. And we have a portion of the population that's still in the education indoctrination system. So it's going to be a tall order to get everybody sorted and get a fighting force built out of that. And, oh, by the way, get rid of all the military age males that are in this country. And that brings me to the last point, which is somebody said to me that Trump shut down the migration into the country. That's true. He has, to a certain extent. Yes. But all the NGOs, all the people that facilitated the mass migration, they're all still operating full tilt down in Panama, down in Venezuela and Colombia. They're all still operating. The officers are still open. Nobody's been arrested. Nothing's been shut down. None of those bastards have been rolled up and charged with, you know, an act of war. So don't buy into all the hype, because until they go after the NGOs, and really the tell is going to be if they go after the Jewish NGOs, because two or three of those really big NGOs that were moving people in the country, they're all Jewish run. So we'll see how serious Trump is about fixing and making America great. Today was not good optics for him. You know, the best thing I saw all day was the, you know, the daggers coming out of RFK's eyes looking at Borla when Borla was in the Oval Office today. And look, I need to say this to the administration, because I know they're listening. You need to get rid of Susie Wiles. You need to get every globalist piece of shit and every big pharma piece of shit out of the administration. You need to get Jared Kushner the fuck out of the White House. And you need to do it tomorrow. I don't know why you invited that fucking reptile into the White House. Pfizer is responsible for the deaths of millions of people. You want to talk about a strategic blunder? That was it. You invited that piece of shit into the White House. And then you gave him a fucking award. More taxpayer money. You need to get rid of your chief of staff. You need to arrest Borla. You need to arrest Bill Gates. You need to arrest the fucking executives for every pharmaceutical that was a part of the COVID scam. And you need to do it tomorrow. Or you need to resign. My God, what a slap in the face to the whole MAHA movement today. And then you make RFK stand in there with this fucking reptile. Shame on you. My God, I've never seen such a grotesque display of fucking treason in my life. Why is that piece of shit anywhere near the White House? Why are you rewarding them with a $70 billion contract for pharmaceuticals? If you actually invested in the U.S., there's a dozen small companies that could pick up and take their patents that are now in the open and have just built enough pharmaceuticals here to where you didn't have to deal with them. But no, your fucking chief of staff invited the World Health Organization, all these other dipshits in here, and you let her do it. So I don't know what deal you made or who you made the deal with, but you took an oath, and you took the oath, and that means that you take the oath, even if it means your life, you fucking pussy. And you get the FBI to arrest these guys tomorrow. Go roll him up tomorrow. God, unbelievable. I was so incensed by that today. Like, you've got to be fucking kidding me. You get this, there's a mountain of evidence that talks about foreign DNA in these shots. A mountain of evidence that talks about turbo cancers. And this dipshit gets online and starts talking about warp speed. My God, how divorced from reality are you? You're so isolated because of your chief of staff, who, by the way, is in bed with Big Pharma, and is facilitating all of this. I'm telling you, if you don't do something about Big Pharma before the end of this, before the end of your 4 years, you're going to be the most despised man in American history. Wake the fuck up. Your base has been telling you for over 2 years that nobody wants to hear about warp speed anymore. Nobody gives a shit how cool you think you are because you got a bunch of fucking bureaucrats to send a military operation that was already planned before you took office into action. You didn't do anything. You just killed a bunch of Americans. You fucking retard. God. Still incensed about it. Pisses me off to no end. Borla in the fucking Oval Office today. It's as bad as Larry Ellison and Scam Altman on day two. See, it's things like that that bring me full circle to say this guy is a fucking retard. This is why I don't care about the renter in the White House. They don't make decisions. It's all the handlers around them that make the decisions. And then we're stuck with the same foreign policy, the same domestic policy, the same fiscal policy, the same health policy, year after year after year. Stop falling for that. Because what today was a grotesque display of just how deeply embedded his chief of staff is into the Big Pharma and the deals they made to get him into office. It's grotesque. And it's beyond repair at this point. It shows you how corrupt the system is. And you know what it's all about? It's not even about pharmaceuticals. It's about the supplements market. They're not making enough off the drugs and off the vaccines. So now they want to own all of the supplements market so they can taint that as well. It's bad enough. You got Bill Gates spraying a peel on all the fresh food, which nobody's ever tested long-term to figure out what the health effects of this are. It's a food preservative. Yeah, well, what's in the preservative? And how many different fucking dicks am I going to grow out of my forehead after I have a fucking banana? It's been sprayed with this shit. It's that kind of malfeasance that should send everybody over the top. But they're still going to the trough buying this shit. And this guy's still walking free. It should make all of your blood boil. That our food system, our food chain is so tainted right now with chemicals and God knows what else. It should be just icing on the cake to see this pharmaceutical fucking reptile standing in the White House. I'm incensed. You should be incensed. The point is, we're watching the slow decline of our society. And I don't know which way it's going to go. I don't know how fast it's going to happen. But it's happening in front of us. So be situationally aware, stay alert to your surroundings, and don't take anything for granted. Don't buy anything on the first pass. Wait for things to develop over 48 or 72 hours, and then and only then start to form an opinion. Be ready for more, folks. It's going to be hot and heavy for the next several weeks. And if there's any truth to the buildup conversation that's going on right now about troops being moved to the Middle East or troops being moved to Qatar, that means another strike on Iran is inbound. So keep your head on a swivel. We'll be back Thursday night at 7 o'clock Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific with the roundtable, and we'll be talking about probably the latest and greatest. Until then, God bless. One team, one fight.